to be together so that we can sing songs to God, praise His name, pray with one another, and ultimately learn things that we can use in our daily lives to be better and greater for Him. This evening, we're going to be talking about Daniel. Daniel, a very popular character of the Bible, not because Daniel is in particular so special, but because God has done great things through him. And tonight, we're going to look at Daniel primarily in chapter 6. So if you would, turn there. We'll spend most of our time there this evening. But before we get into Daniel chapter 6, I'd like to give a little bit of an introduction summary of the first five chapters of Daniel. In chapter 1, we recall that Nebuchadnezzar conquers Judah. He takes the youths from the area for training. Daniel, along with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, these are their given names at the time. Daniel does not want to defile himself with the king's food. And so, with favor from God, he appears healthier without this food that he was not able to eat. After 3 years of training, they are presented to Nebuchadnezzar and are deemed 10 times better than magicians and enchanters throughout the kingdom. In chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. And because the wise men of Babylon can't reveal the dream or the interpretation, Nebuchadnezzar decides to have all of these wise men killed. Well, Daniel hears of it, and after God gives him the interpretation dream, he requests an audience with the king and tells him the dream and the meaning. Nebuchadnezzar gives Daniel honors, and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are put over the affairs of the province while Daniel stays in the king's court. In chapter 3, Nebuchadnezzar makes a golden image and declares that all should worship it. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego don't and are cast into a fiery furnace and, of course, with God's help, survive. And because of this, Nebuchadnezzar forbids anything against God, and the three of them are promoted. In chapter 4, after the magicians, enchanters, and Chaldeans and astrologers are unable to interpret another one of Nebuchadnezzar's dream, Daniel tells him the meaning. After a year, God humbles Nebuchadnezzar due to his pride for 7 years. And then after he praises God for his right ways and for God's ability to humble people, he is restored. And in chapter 5 years later, one of Nebuchadnezzar's successors is the king and defiles the vessels of the temple, and a hand writes on the wall. After all the other wise people in the kingdom fail to interpret the writing, Daniel is summoned and delivers the bad news for King Belshazzar. His days as king are over. Belshazzar proclaimed that Daniel should be his successor, but that night the kingdom was taken by Darius of the Medes and the Persians. And so that takes us into chapter 6, which we'll read in its entirety and then make a few points for us to learn from. Starting in verse 1 of chapter 6 in the book of Daniel, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be throughout the whole kingdom, and over them 3 high officials, of whom Daniel was one, to whom these satraps should give account, so that the king might suffer no loss. Then this Daniel became distinguished above all the other high officials and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Then the high officials and the satraps sought to find a ground for complaint against Daniel with regard to the kingdom, but they could find no ground for complaint or any fault because he was faithful and no error or fault was found in him. Verse 5, then these men said, "We shall not find any ground for complaint against this Daniel unless we find it in connection with the law of his God." Then these high officials and satraps came by agreement to the king and said to him, "O King Darius, live forever." All the high officials of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps, the counselors and the governors are agreed that the king should establish an ordinance and enforce an injunction that whoever makes petition to any god or man for 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be revoked. Therefore, King Darius signed the document and injunction. Verse Verse 10, when Daniel knew that the document had been signed, he went to his house, where he had windows in his upper chamber open toward Jerusalem. He got down on his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as he had done previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and plea before his God. Then they came near and said before the king concerning the injunction, O king, did you not sign an injunction that anyone who makes petition to any god or man within 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, The thing stands fast, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be revoked. Then they answered and said before the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or the injunction you have signed, but makes his petition 3 times a day. Then the king, when he heard these words, was much distressed and set his mind to deliver Daniel, and he labored till the sun went down to rescue him. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, Know, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or ordinance that the king establishes can be changed. Then the king commanded, and Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. The king declared to Daniel, May your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you. And a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet, and with the signet of his lords, that nothing might be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went to his place and spent the night fasting. No diversions were brought to him, and sleep fled from him. Then at break of day, the king arose and went in haste to the den of lions. As he came near to the den where Daniel was, he cried out in a tone of anguish. The king declared to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? Then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and they have not harmed me, because I was found blameless before him, and also before you, O king, I have done no harm. Then the king was exceedingly glad and commanded that Daniel be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no kind of harm was found on him, because he had trusted in his God. And the king commanded, and those men who had maliciously accused Daniel were brought and cast into the den of lions, they, their children, and their wives. And before they reached the bottom of the den, the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces. Then King Darius wrote to all the peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, Peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in all my royal dominion, people are to tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, enduring forever. His kingdom shall never be destroyed, and his dominion shall be to the end. He delivers and rescues. He works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth. He who has saved Daniel from the power of the lions. So this Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. What a fantastic story and example for us to read about Daniel, who served our God faithfully. It was an example to so many. And because of that, I'd like to point out just a few things that we can take away. A few things that we can use in our lives as encouragement, but also as ways for us to go about the world faithfully, planning and proceeding to make a difference in the lives of other people. Our first point is that godliness and prosperity are not mutually exclusive properties. Sometimes we get this idea, don't we, that we look out into the world and somehow we say, because of verses like maybe 1 Timothy 6:10, for the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. Matthew 19:23, and Jesus said to his disciples, Truly I say to you, only with difficulty will a rich person enter the kingdom of God. We get this idea that if there's any prosperity in a person's life, maybe even physically, that somehow they are disparate from God. But I think we can see that examples in the Bible, like Daniel, like Solomon, Job, Abraham, and Joseph, that just because you have even earthly possessions or wealth, that you're somehow out of favor and out of alignment with God's will. That doesn't mean that the words that we read are not true, but it means that God, in his own right, can choose to bless whomever he pleases, and we can be thankful for that. We even saw that Daniel was promoted by Nebuchadnezzar and was able to promote Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He was able to do all this without compromising his integrity. And so the message here, be careful when we look around and we see somebody who seems prosperous. Let's not discount what they're doing or suggest or imply that maybe they're not right with God. Let's look at the things that we can judge and also all seek to use the blessings that God has given us, be stewards to share with those who need it. Our second point this evening is that people will hold and even use your religion against you. I think we saw this pretty clear. Recall back in the beginning when they first left their training that Nebuchadnezzar says they are 10 times more wise than all these people, right? But yet somehow when he has this dream, does he call upon Daniel? No, he doesn't call upon Daniel. It's only after Daniel hears of it and petitions to become you have an audience with the king that he is able to communicate this dream, its interpretation. In chapter 4, with this other dream, he was the last one consulted. And again with Belshazzar, Daniel is last consulted in the writing after the queen asks, hey, I remember hearing about this person named Daniel. We even saw that when those men came in Vermont and told on Daniel that he was praying. They say, Daniel, remember that exile from Judah, even speaking back to who he is and what he was and who he served. It discounted for that. And we know that people in this world can oftentimes take our faith and sometimes call it a simple, uneducated, believing in wildish fantasies, right? But we know what the truth is. And people will hold that against us, treat us differently. The reality is, though, we have to be okay with that. Because who's going to treat us differently because of our faith? God. And that, my friends, is a good thing. But people will also not only just hold this against us, they will use it against us, as we saw in the case of Daniel. In a very impressive way, in fact. So they acknowledge and recognize Daniel's faith. And what did they say? They say, he is faithful in all things. If we're going to find something, anything against Daniel, what's it going to be? It's going to be in regards to the law of his God. What a fantastic message that is. That they can look to Daniel and say, he is so well behaved, so faithful, such a good steward. And if we're going to find and catch him in any wrongdoing, it's going to be because he serves his God. Think about your own life tonight. Can people that you know, can the people that you would identify as those who don't like you, the people that you can identify as those who would love to find something wrong with you, can they look to your faith and say that person is so faithful to their God that that is a weakness? That's the twisted definition of weakness in this world today. A faith is a weakness to people. And know that people in this world will take battles to places that you are not willing to go. And you have to remember that. That we use circumstances that will violate your conscience, violate the will of God, and they'll use that to their advantage to harm you. But again, remember where our faith lies, and this place is not our home. And we can use God's word and use his example to heap coals on their heads when necessary. But people will hold you and even use your religion against you. Point number 3 is that we should show our faith before hardship comes. Recall in verse 10 there, right? It says, he went and prayed as he had done previously. We sometimes get in this habit where we look to bad things, and we look for places where we can, as Christians, provide and be an example. But we don't do it. We say, let's wait until the time comes. When things get really bad, then we'll make a stand. But I fear when that's our approach and our angle that day will never come, because over time we're chiseled and eroded away, and the slow but awful changes this world brings just get commonplace. We get used to them. So we need to choose today. Choose very early in life, as did Daniel, that we're going to serve God. And also it's important because you lose your influence if you wait until those things come before you make a stand. If you don't have that faith and have that stand and also make people know about it, your influence is completely diminished. You can't wait to some bad circumstance and rely on your faith as an excuse or a reason to not do what they're expecting you to do if you haven't told them about it ahead of time. Own your faith, believe it, and make it something you're proud of. And then, when there's something that comes up, that person already knows. And it makes the conversation a whole lot simpler. So remember, choose today to show your faith, stand on it, and do the things that it calls you to do, because that will make your example and your influence a multiple of what it would be otherwise. Also, let's keep in mind that integrity forms the strongest of allies. So impressive was it not, reading about the king and what he was doing? He hears this message, and what does he do? He's so distressed that he works all day long to try to find a way to solve this for Daniel and for himself. He works tirelessly, so much so that the people who created this entrapment come to him to offer him a gentle reminder. You know, O king, there's nothing that you can do in accordance with the law. You know, people who stand on integrity stand together. And their standing together is not simply because it's convenient at the time. Often we'll see that evil people will stand so long as it benefits their own personal interests. And once the times get tough, the going gets easy, and they disperse. But I've had examples in my own life, in my professional career, that when things get really bad, if you stand on what you believe in, honor the truth, and honor other people, that those who value integrity will come to your defense, and you will have a friend. But people also see that if you don't have integrity, it's very visible. And in this case, the king fought very hard for Daniel. At the end of the day, though, he had to do what he had to do. So we need to choose in our lives to honor the integrity. That means treating people fairly, treating people kindly, honoring God's laws, and really practice what it is the Bible tells you to do. Because otherwise, the people, as we see, are waiting and watching, and they will use every slip, if not only for the peace of their mind, that they aren't a faithful follower of God. And also, we want to see, though, that your faith can make an impression even on those in positions of authority. In verse 16, we see, may your God whom you serve continually deliver you. He had at least a belief that that would happen. He was impressed enough by Daniel's example that he even had that thought. He could even say those words. So Darius puts him into the lions, fasted without sleep the entire night, and probably as quickly and earliest as law would allow, he rushes to see how Daniel is doing. And in verse 20, oh, Daniel, servant of the living God, sounds like somebody who's been influenced, does it not? Has your God whom you serve continually been able to deliver you from the lions? Daniel made an impression. You know, we can think about politicians and celebrities, CEOs, to try to validate our faith. We look and we try to find these examples, these heroes. Like, look at that person. Look, they're a Christian. We don't need them to validate our faith. The Bible does that for us. It speaks living truth. And that is our confidence. Not in those who we like to believe. And we have to bear in mind that we can also do similar things, that we can impress employers. We can impress the politicians, not the other way around. That we can impress our spouses with the gospel by living it. We can impress our parents. We can be the leaders. We can be the examples to authority. It doesn't have to be the other way around. And we saw that Daniel did that and made a tremendous influence in people's lives. Just a few more points and then the conclusion. We should trust in God and know that he will deliver us when it really counts. We can't expect in our lives that no harm will ever come to us. It will. The world likes to look at all around us and say, where was God when this happened? Where was God when that happened? Do bad things happen? Absolutely yes. But does God tell us that bad things will happen? Absolutely not. But what he does tell us is that when it really and truly counts, he will be there for you. When this earth, the elements burn up, he will be there for you when it really counts. And in verse 23, we saw here no harm was done because what? He had trusted in his God. 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13, God is faithful and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with temptation, he will also provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure it. He has gifted to us eternal life. That is the true victory. That is the true deliverance. And let's bear that in mind when we face the challenges of the day. And when it came for Daniel in this example, he used Daniel and made a great example of him. That he survived when it really counted. And he'll do that for us too. Also, we need to keep in mind that even in this world, the righteous and just, they really do prevail. We're quite tempted sometimes to look around. We get jaded and we see all these people doing evil things. They are prosperous. They do succeed in the world's terms. And they have these things that we want. And we say, how is this happening? But we also have to keep in mind that that is the shiny ball that's too easy to see. But look around you. The righteous and the justice in this world really do prevail. Criminals really do go to jail. Bad people really do have bad things happen to them. And in this case, what did we see? We saw that those men who conspired and schemed and plotted against Daniel, ultimately they and their children ended up in the lion's den with them. And we don't take pleasure in this. Vengeance is God's. And we saw he executed it there. But we have to know that God is in control of all things. He knows what's going on, and he elects people in power. And he does hold people responsible and accountable. So the righteous can prevail, and there's hope in that, even this world. And we might keep that in mind that Daniel prevailed in this circumstance, but we have to remember that the measure of your life is how it honors and glorifies God. This story, the book is called Daniel. The character of Daniel is in the book. But this story is not even about Daniel. He just happens to be there. And he happens to be named Daniel. And he happened to be a person that God was able to work through to make a really impressive statement. So that thousands of years later, here we all are today listening to a story about God doing wonderful things. What can we do in our lives so that if the earth continues to revolve around the sun for another 3,000 years, that somebody might read about something you did to show God's glory? That's the way that we should be trying to live. God was glorified in this story on numerous occasions. In 25 through 27, he put this edict out, and as far as in the entire kingdom, everywhere that he controlled, he wanted to be known that Daniel's God did this amazing thing. In chapter 3, Nebuchadnezzar did a similar thing. God was in control. And we saw this because these punishments, they weren't simple. They were big. They were public. And it wasn't that anybody could contest what had happened, right? Nobody could contest that three people were thrown into fire and survived. People can't contest that Daniel went into the lion's den. People cannot contest that Jesus was put into a tomb and was not there later. God is in control, and God does big and beautiful and wonderful things that can teach us and inspire us. And he did that through the life of Daniel and his friends. So what we can do this evening is think about our lives. What are we doing? Where are we going? Is this our life? Are we stewards of a life that God has blessed us with? What can we choose to do today so that we can really make a difference in this world? Inspire other people. But we have to know that that starts with the relationship with God. We all have one. No matter our spiritual state, we all have a relationship with God. Just like everyone has a relationship with their parents, their siblings, their employers. Some of it's good, some of it's bad. But the key to figuring it out is reflecting on it. Tonight, just look inside. Think true and hard. Where are you at? The Bible tells us how to measure success. Is a relationship good? Is a relationship not good? But we have to keep in mind that things can look really good and feel good in this life, but when it really counts, if we want God to deliver us, we must submit to Him. We must choose a life as early as we possibly can to dedicate ourselves to Him. And this evening we have a very clear opportunity that if you're living right with God, let's celebrate in song with each other. If you're not, we are here to make a difference and help you. But ultimately, God is in control. God will deliver when it really counts. If you need to this evening, come forward as we stand and as we sing.